Today, from the Wings Archives, Marilyn Waring attacks the sacred institution known as the gross domestic product and proposes a change. You'll hear from her and from filmmaker Terry Nash, whose documentary based on Waring's book Who's Counting brought the concept to the big screen.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
There's Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world. Produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You're starting from the wrong premise. I mean, all of these decisions were based on the wrong figures in the first place.
Marilyn Waring.
Doesn't matter what they say, GDP might grow up, but GDP is utterly unrelated to the well-being of a community. It tells you nothing about levels of poverty. It tells you nothing about the distribution of poverty. It tells you nothing about primary health care, educational standards, environmental cleanliness. And folks have realized that this unidimensional economic fabrication just doesn't bear any relationship to their lives.
Who's Counting? Marilyn Waring on Sex, Lies, and Global Economics is a film about the life and work of a feminist economics writer from New Zealand. The film was created by Terry Nash for the National Film Board of Canada. Nash also made the film If You Love This Planet, about the life and work of anti-nuclear activist Helen Caldicott.
Anybody who rented that film had to be reported to the FBI.
If You Love This Planet won an Academy Award in the United States, but was effectively banned from importation into the country by being labeled dangerous propaganda by the Justice Department. Filmmaker Terry Nash.
You know, you really have to question democracy in that case. I mean, I made it because it was really important, I think, to put those sorts of ideas on the table, because I think a real democracy can only exist if you have an informed public and if the public has choices. And I think it's important that all these ideas get out there.
In If You Love This Planet, Helen Caldicott demystifies and debunks government and corporate rhetoric about nuclear defense. In Nash's new film, Marilyn Waring does the same to modern economics. Here's an excerpt from Who's Counting.
The more that you smoke cigarettes, or the more that you have automobile accidents, the more growth increases. Now, I'd be fairly unlikely, having smashed my car, to come home and say, darling, don't worry about it, we've just contributed to the national income of the country. I mean, I wouldn't run my household like that, and I can't think like that. I would kind of consider that a debit in my account. A cost, not a benefit. National income accounting doesn't have a debit side. As long as the activity passes through the market, it's good for growth. Let me give you a very easy example. The voyage of the Exxon Valdez. Now, the Exxon Valdez is most likely the most productive oil tanker voyage ever known on the face of the planet. Now, if it had simply loaded up its oil in Alaska and made its way down the West Coast and discharged into a bunker, it would have been a moderately productive voyage in economic terms. But if you want to have fantastic growth, it's a very good idea to ram your tanker into an iceberg. Immediately there are the insurance costs and the new tanker. This is great for growth. Then there are the civil legal proceedings and the criminal legal proceedings. Immediately, of course, there's the payment for the cleanup operation. Then down the way a little bit, there are the compensations to fisher people and the compensations to the tourist industry. And of course, there is the film, the television rights, the book, the various newspaper and media exercises that go on. And of course, consequently, there is the influx of subscriptions to memberships of every greenie organization you can think of. fantastically productive oil tanker voyage. You see what I mean? It all added to growth. Nobody stood there and said, "Dearie me, just lost an oil tanker. Better subtract that from the national income accounts."
She's very funny.
Filmmaker Terry Nash.
This isn't just a, you know, a dull film. She's drop-dead funny. She's got a very, very dry wit, and she really keeps people in stitches. I mean, it alternates between being poignant, but she has an extraordinary take on it all, and she puts things in such a way that also make people laugh at the absurdity of it all. And I think you really need that, because people assume it's all a heavy subject, and she's really got away with it.
The film Who's Counting covers not just Marilyn Waring's economic philosophy, but how she arrived at it, starting with her entry into New Zealand politics as the youngest person ever elected to Parliament.
She was 22 when she was elected. It was International Women's Year in 1975, and there weren't any women in Parliament, and a group of her friends got together and thought, well, you know, what can we do? And put their names in, and she says, much to her horror, she was elected to a safe seat, and she couldn't lose. She really wanted to be a classical singer, but she got waylaid into politics.
It was 1975. It was International Women's Year. I was 22 years old, and I put my name in, and sort of 6 weeks later, with some horror, recognised that I'd just been chosen the candidate for a safe seat, that I couldn't lose.
Honourable members of the House of Representatives, you meet here today as members of the 38th Parliament.
When you came in the door, of course, you should always bow to the Speaker. And then, going to your seat here.
I'm not sure whether they've put me up here to keep me quiet or so that I'm nearest the door.
Waring not only represented women in Parliament, but also her rural district.
Quite a number of us old-timers were fairly apprehensive. We'd heard a bit about this young woman and her beliefs and so on, so we were a little bit apprehensive about what we were going to come across.
Basically, the farmers around here really work with the forces of nature. They were extraordinary moments for me because people were calling me a radical feminist. And here I was in a constituency that was rural. It was white. It was propertied. It was extremely conservative. And I was working with predominantly men. And I realized then there's nothing radical about what I'm saying at all. Not in the context of land like this, not in the context of values that this land teaches you.
It was in the summer, towards the end of February, I think it was, and I think we must have been making some late hay. And this long-haired young woman knocked on my door and said that she was Marilyn Waring, and I knew who she was. She said she was looking for support for candidacy. And I said, well, look, if you don't mind waiting a minute, I'm just baking some scones to get out to the men in the field. And my daughter woke and was very fractious, and I couldn't do that and look after her and look after the scones and the orange juice and the sandwiches and things like that. So Marilyn, bless her, said, well, come on, Susan, we'll take you out to the garden. They picked the white butterfly caterpillars off my rather eaten cabbages. So, and kept her out of the way while I finished doing what I was doing. And then afterwards, we sat down on the step, the cold orange juice, and I said to her, I've never done this sort of thing before. I don't know what sort of questions to ask you as a delegate. And she said, well, I've never been a candidate before, so I can't help you.
Her youth notwithstanding, Waring was appreciated by a wide range of New Zealanders. The women cheered her. Crusty conservative men were said to hang on her words, and she treated the indigenous people, the Maori, with respect.
If there was anything that she thought would be of interest to us or we should know, she came and told us. And that was a new approach, eh? That somebody cared enough. We didn't have to go to Marilyn, she came to us.
There's
a phrase in Māori, Turanga Waiwai, a place to stand. And my constituency was my place to stand. I mean, I came from here. You couldn't shove me out of here, and you couldn't tell me what the people here wanted. You know, I was one of them. And so I had a real legitimacy because this was my Turanga Waiwai.
Marilyn Waring of New Zealand from the film Who's Counting? Marilyn Waring on Sex, Lies, and Global Economics. Filmmaker Terry Nash.
She was a real anomaly as the only woman and certainly the youngest member that had ever been in New Zealand politics. She was followed around by camera crews all over the place, and we've got early footage of her in Parliament. She discovered very early on in her parliamentary career that she was having a real tough time fighting for certain things for her constituency. One thing was that she was having a difficult time getting the guys in Parliament to understand that women worked in her constituency, and it was a rural constituency, a farming constituency. And she was trying to get daycare and that sort of thing for the women there, and they said, you know, why would they need daycare? They don't do anything. They don't work simply because they were not earning money. They were mostly farm wives and worked all the time. And Marilyn knew that very well and realized that there was certainly a confusion between the idea of productivity and working. The other thing was that there was a company that was trying to establish a gold mine on a mountain in her constituency, and she found it was really, really difficult to try and convince the parliamentarians that there were all sorts of values in this land that couldn't be number crunched, and that a gold mine would start causing pollution, all sorts of other things like that that simply didn't factor into the way that things were valued. At 24, she was put in charge of all the budgets, the budget committee that oversaw the budgets of New Zealand. And then 9 years after she was elected, she brought down her own government over the nuclear issue. Her government had a one-seat majority in the House and was in power and were reneging on their commitment to the New Zealand people to keep New Zealand a nuclear-free zone. The United States was pressuring New Zealand to allow their nuclear ships. Her government decided to renege on their commitment, and she crossed the floor of the House with a one-seat majority and crashed her own government, thus making all sorts of enemies. After she left Parliament, she decided to really explore the sorts of things that she had discovered when she was in politics, and particularly when she was in charge of the budgets.
In a small country like New Zealand, this is the sole budget appropriations public accounts committee of a parliament. So we review everything of in terms of the whole 45 government ministries and departments and trading divisions. And of course, you can imagine that the situation is about nine men, you know, in their suits with me, the small junior at the end of the table, faced by treasury officials or departmental officials at the other end of the table. And I developed the art of the dumb question. I was amazed all the time they would wheel in up these papers. And the difficulty was they were all full of jargon economic phrases, and I didn't understand what they meant. So I would wait until it was my turn, and I would say, what does so-and-so mean? You know, and they would give you an answer, and I'd say, do you have any English that you can explain that in, any real words? And I can still recall, you know, interchanges when they were briefing me in my office, and they would teach me something, and I would say, but that's preposterous, or that's crazy, or that's ludicrous. And they would say to me, oh, well, yes, it is, but those are the rules. Other countries started to invite me there as their guest. And when you went there, you could ask to see their chair people of public accounts committees, their treasury boards, their budget appropriations committees. And I began to realise, hey, it's nothing to do with New Zealand. These are the rules everywhere.
She realized that there was a system in place, and after she left Parliament, she went to the United Nations to really explore this system. It's run by the United Nations. It's called the United Nations System of National Accounts. And all countries have to conform to it, or they can't join the United Nations, they can't belong to the UN, they can't get funding from the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund. And there are very stringent rules, and it's the way that the GDP, or the what you call economic growth, is calculated.
And I developed very early a kind of, it was a personal technique, which was in any community that I went into, I'd asked until I was introduced to a woman my age. And I would try and develop a trust in that situation. And then on a number of occasions, spend an entire day with her, you know, telling my little tape recorder what she was doing all the time and taking photographs of her.
I was just saying that that Marilyn went to the United Nations to see what these rules were, and she said there were all these books, there were like phone directories even, but except more boring, just full of jargon about how to calculate the GDP. And it assumes, of course, that economic growth is an unqualified good, that it measures the well-being of a community. And it has massive impact on government policy.
It's perfectly obvious that the people who are visible to you as contributors to the economy are the people who will be visible when you make policy. And if you're not visible as a producer in a nation's economy, then you're going to be invisible in the distribution of benefits. And wherever I was, this was the world situation for women. Well, Tendai was a 14-year-old who lived in the Lerveld in Zimbabwe. And I'm interested in the work days of young women because the International Labour Organization specifies that under 14-year-olds don't work. You've got to realize that in many cultures don't think in terms of morning, afternoon and evening. So the easiest way is just to draw a line in the dirt, mark a point where, you know, the villages get the sun coming up, the sun at like a midpoint in the morning, the sun directly above the village, and going down in the afternoon, and sunset, and then just stars out in the night time, and then you just sit quietly for however long it takes and work through, you know. When the sun is here, what are you doing? When it's moved to this point, what are you doing? When it's right high in the sky above the village, what's happening then? As it's coming down in the afternoon, where are you? How far from the village are you? At sunset, what's happening then? And when the stars finally come out at night, are you asleep yet? Or are you still working? There's no leisure in these periods at all, and we're speaking of 16 to 18 hour days every day of the week. And all of the activities that they're involved in this time are unrecorded. They're called non-productive, they're called uneconomic. These women are apparently at leisure during these enormously work-filled days.
The thing is, the only thing that the system measures is money, what they call the cash-generating capacity, and it has to go through the marketplace in order to count.
Time is the one primary thing we all have to exchange, and time use best describes women's lives anyway. There's no reason why we could not do major census surveys in terms of time use, just as we do census surveys for income. These time use surveys were conducted in Pakistan. You can record time use so easily and immediately see the differences in the lifestyles between women and men. You can see here straight away that men engage in about 5 different activities during a day, and that women in about a dozen. That they are continually broken. In addition, you've got to remember that
Most of these activities are going to be simultaneous with childcare or food preparation. You can see that men's days are much, much shorter than women's. Don't be confused by where these lines are. All of this orange colour is leisure and personal activities. And you'll notice that there's so little of that in respect of women's activities here. When we analysed this in terms of time use, we found that the most exacting activity that took the most time was that for women, for 5 hours every day, they were involved in food preparation and cooking, primarily cooking. And what that demonstrated to us was the complete inefficiency of their tulas, or their cooking stoves. Now, if you want to increase the productivity of this village, the particular technology change that is needed then are new stoves. This is where the priorities lie, and it lies in cutting down that time. In Pakistan, the women needed stoves. In Kenya, the technology priority is inexpensive water pumps to save the women time every day. And the translator asks, "And what do the men do?" It's becoming part of a global situation for me now. I mean, I'm able to make analogies between the unpaid rural women in Bangladesh or in the Philippines and the woman back in my constituency whose work is also invisible. Very often too in so-called developed countries, there'll be what you call pay-as-you-go superannuation schemes. If you're not earning a salary or a wage, you actually can't contribute. So you frequently have women who have worked fantastically long hours, 40, 45 years. They've never had any cash, say, to put into a superannuation scheme. And at the so-called end of their working life, because they don't stop working till they die, but at that point, the government then says, well, not only have you been invisible, but now you are welfare. Now you are a dependent on the state. Now you are a bludger. Now you're one of our obligations. You know, so you've got this extraordinary choice. You go from being nobody to being a problem, in spite of the fact that of all the people in the population, you just worked harder than anybody else for all those years, except you probably didn't get paid for it.
Based on her reevaluation of economics, Marilyn Waring wrote the book If Women Counted, which caught the attention of filmmaker Terry Nash.
The name of the book is If Women Counted. And as a matter of fact, she's just finished another book called Three Masquerades. Marilyn talks about what she calls economics anxiety, which a lot of us, in particular women, suffer from. You know, I was really put off by all that boring jargon about economics. And she talks about the fact that it's quite deliberate. You're not meant to understand it. And as a matter of fact, a lot of it doesn't make any sense anyway. But when I read her book, I realized it's so accessible. It's so clear. And part of what she does, and Gloria Steinem says this in the film, if you don't have the information, you can't act on it. And that's really what Marilyn tries to do. She demystifies the language. She cuts through the jargon. She says, you know, this is what it says, this is what it means, and this is the effect it has on your life. She really succeeds in making all of this really accessible, because unless ordinary people understand it, the so-called experts are going to keep running with this stuff. I mean, United States alone spends $41 million an hour on the military, not including anything nuclear. And imagine if that sort of funding went into health and education and culture and social services, $41 million an hour, what a difference that could make. Personally, I would rather be protected by good health and education than by weapons. But the weapon system just makes massive amounts of money for the multinationals and transnationals involved in it, and is strongly supported by the governments, of course. But it's a very, very destructive system. Now, the film, I've tried to follow in Marilyn's quest for accessibility and in every way to try and make this a really accessible film. Very visual, divided into 15 chapters. I think the whole is more than the sum of its parts. But after that, it can be sort of pulled apart. There's black and little titles between each chapter. There's certain chapters that deal quite specifically with the environment, with the sort of arguments that the number crunchers use that can be pulled out and applied to saving the rainforests or daycare and all sorts of aspects of the developing world. And you go all over the world. For example, we've got a chapter in the Philippines in the film. Women there who were living on the land, subsistence farmers, growing things to feed their own children. And because they're not generating any cash by doing this, they're just having a wonderful, healthy community with healthy children. A multinational comes in and they get kicked off the land. The monocrop plantation is considered to be much more productive and much more valuable. They get kicked off the land so that it can be taken over to grow these monocrops for export back to North America. These people end up in the streets in abject poverty. Some of the children end up in prostitution. And that, of course, increases the GDP because the prostitution then is making money. And as a matter of fact, is included in their calculations, even though some of it's underground. It's what they call imputed. They still calculate it as having a value.
Who's Counting? Marilyn Waring on Sex, Lies, and Global Economics debuted at film festivals in 1995. As of 2020, the gross domestic product is still the universal yardstick for the supposed health of countries' economics. Canadians can watch or order the film Who's Counting through the National Film Board of Canada, www.nfb.ca. In the U.S., Who's Counting is distributed by Bullfrog Films. The credits for this radio program are as follows. Clips from the film Who's Counting, courtesy of Bullfrog Films. Interview with Terry Nash, conducted by the late Sue Supriano for her program Steppin' Out of Babylon. Editing for Wings by Frieda Worden and Donna Hoffman. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose forthcoming series of speakers and discussions is titled Maternal Gift Economy, Breaking Through. Their website is maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.